Let me give it a go again. I thank Nick for chairing this morning while I was taking care of a small emergency. But witnessed the last one full hour of the discussion, which was of very high quality, and I'm sure we can maintain that in the afternoon. So I give the floor to Matt to introduce the final slide deck.
Thank you. So this session has probably quite a lot of work to do, as we probably came up in this morning's discussion, in that it covers aspects of medium and longer term performance. I'll come back to the discussion we had in stream one around the objectives of the management commentary, and really what we're doing here, which is illustrated on slide four, is implementing those objectives into performance reporting. So we've tried to use language that carries those objectives through. I know we took away from the first meeting that the entity's purpose should be an important sphere for the content of the report, so that is something that we brought into the objectives after our stream one discussion and sort of features in some of the language we use here. So this is an area where I think the distinction between responsibilities is particularly important. We are asking management through the management commentary to address the entity's progress and the implications of that progress, or providing the information to support an assessment of those implications. We are not asking the entity to make predictions of what the progress means for future performance, although we recognise that it might choose to do so. So that's a distinction we've sought to maintain throughout the illustrative drafting, that sort of distinction between the entity providing the information to support an assessment and users taking responsibility for making the assessment. This is an area where what to report is going to rely quite heavily on the discussions we have in stream three. On slide six, we just sort of give you a very broad overview, but you know, we anticipate talking about strategy, including the entity's purpose in stream three, about the entity's operating environment, including the external trends and principal risks affecting it, and the entity's business model. And loosely, I think you can see those as mapping in to the two objectives we have for this afternoon, around which we divided into matters affecting the entity's future development. That's perhaps, you might say, is the known matters, the matters that management is already seeking to address, has a strategy for, and matters that potentially affect the critical features of the entity's business model. So perhaps things where the entity is being managed in a way that supports that broad purpose without actually identifying any detailed concerns or specific issues. Now, I think we would recognise that there is potential overlap between those areas, and you could get into a discussion around any particular issue, whether it falls into what we've sort of called the 3B or the 3C areas. By separating them out, we think we need to provide guidance in the management commentary practice statement to help people to get to discussing those issues from both perspectives. That doesn't mean two discussions. It doesn't mean they need to be distinct discussions. So the structure of what we're proposing in the practice statement does not necessarily need to be mirrored in the structure of a management commentary itself. So the first part of this discussion, we'll take questions, I think in the interest of time, we'll take questions on both parts together. But the first part I'm going to talk to you about is matters affecting future development. And on slide 9, we illustrate that, we provide some illustrations of weighted progress in implementing a strategy could be reported. And then on slide 10, we provide some illustrations of ways in which the implications of the strategy and the progress on the strategy could be communicated. And importantly, I think, in relation to the implications, some of that information, some of the information that a user would need to assess the implications may actually follow from the business model description. For example, you might have a part of the business where there's a strategy to enhance performance. If the business model tells you the scale of that part of the business, then that goes some way already to help you assess the implications of the strategy if it works. So I acknowledge both overlap in terms of Stream 3 telling us what is important to cover in terms of reporting on progress, but also Stream 3 potentially is providing disclosures that help a user to understand the implications of that progress. Now, we also recognise here that one way of explaining the implications of progress is by providing forecasts or predictions. Again, not something that we're seeking to mandate, but where the entity is publishing that information, we feel that it's going to have an important information content for someone seeking to understand the matters being covered in the management commentary. So we want to bring that into the management commentary. And we also think that the assumptions and scope of any forecast made need to be understood in the context of the wider performance being presented in the management commentary. So those are the two sort of rationales for recognising the use of forecasts without necessarily or without requiring their use. We also here talk about the shorter term implications. So there may be matters known to management because of events that have happened after the period end. That might be events which are shocks to performance, or it might be trends that are routinely monitored. So some businesses, and again, we recognise that not every business will have an order book, and the trend in that order book after the period end may provide important insight for users. So we wanted to address that aspect of future performance separately within the drafting. So that covers what you might consider the sort of medium-term aspects of performance that where insight might be needed. Then the second part of the discussion we want to cover is around the longer term aspects, where there may be a critical feature of the business model that needs to be managed to support the sustainable performance of the entity, but the threats to that, the challenges and the opportunities to that may be much less specific. Nevertheless, because of the scale of importance, it is important for a user to understand what those are. And I think this was an area where we were particularly conscious of the risk that if we weren't careful, our management commentary language could lead to over-disclosure, for example, over-disclosure of risks, which actually starts to reduce the value of the most significant risks being disclosed. So this is the one place where we have gone beyond the language we had on materiality, and we've introduced the word critical. I think there's a question as to whether that is the right term to use long term. We're not trying to redefine materiality here. We just want to emphasise that these long term, these sort of key features of the business model, they have to be, you know, they have to have a reasonable likelihood of becoming an issue, and they have to be so major that a user needs to understand it, because it would not be possible to take account of every potential likelihood that could affect the business. So we're seeking with the drafting to maintain a balance in terms of the level of disclosure, and we'd be interested to hear from you in terms of whether we've got that right. We use language here which links notably to integrated reporting and the EU's non-financial reporting directive in terms of both resources and relationships and the impacts that the entity potentially has on those relationships. And again, what we're seeking to do here is understand those from the perspective of things that could then result in a consequential impact on the entity's own financial performance. That's covered on slides 17 and 18. When we cover business model in stream three, I'm sure we'll get to questions of how much granularity we provide within the practice statement over identifying those resources and relationships, and for example, the six capitals view from integrated reporting is one way in which that could be approached. We identify on slides 19 and 20 four broad features for information, characteristics of information that we think needs to address this area. And going back to the discussion we had at the start about where we saw challenges in the information available to users, we're seeking to address those here. So the first is that information should be specific to the matter, and we cover that in the illustrative drafting paragraph 39. The second is recognising that the analysis here may need to be adapted from the internal information used to manage the business. So, for example, the business may be managing staff retention quite sort of naturally and using internal HR systems to do so. We don't want to try and push disclosure of the information in those systems, but we do anticipate that maybe that information might need to be summarised up in a form that addresses a specific user concern, and that's what we're seeking to support there. We also recognise that particularly here, the information needed may need to be over multiple periods because the trends perhaps emerge over a period of time. So it may not be very useful to me to know that someone's staff satisfaction rating is 7 out of 10, but it might be useful to me to know that it's been on an upward or a downward trend over the last 4 or 5 years. So recognising here that the use of comparative information may need to be broader than entities would normally provide in relation to other measures. And then lastly, we recognise here that some of the information provided on performance may be qualitative in nature. We want to support the value of that information by encouraging links back to management's own performance milestones. I think this is an area where the distinction between what is management's opinion, management's view, and what is fact that management is seeing and summarising up is particularly important. And again, just because this information is qualitative in nature doesn't mean that users don't need to draw comparison between past performance and current performance as a basis for understanding the progress being made. And then lastly, in the drafting, we pick up on a number of different methods that have become increasingly popular here in terms of communicating performance in managing those matters. So that is surveys, for example, measures such as net promoter score, staff satisfaction, but also sensitivities, for example, in relation to the TCFD's work on climate change, recommendations there, and scenario-based analysis. And that may be as simple as providing basic information that allows users to assess those scenarios, or actually management sort of running through how it assesses the scenarios. So we're trying to strike a balance here between ensuring transparency and appropriate application of those methods whilst avoiding seeming to imply prescription over any of those methods, because we recognise they will need to be unique to the particular circumstance being covered. So that's actually quite a short piece of drafting in the deck that has to do quite a lot of work. We would be particularly interested in your views on whether we have the structure of the guidance right, and whether we have approached it with the right level of detail to close some of those gaps in practice whilst avoiding over-prescribing information which could lead to disclosures that aren't useful. Lastly, as always, views on whether we are missing anything would be most welcome. So with that, if we can open it up for comment.
Okay.
You go for it.
Some of these things probably will recycle back. I'll just make some few initial comments. So one on the word critical. So I think this is the wrong word. I do think the idea that you want to have a word or a qualifier to suggest that you don't put everything in is a fine intent. My issue with the word critical is because it has such a meaning colloquially, as opposed to sort of technically, you know, use it in terms of critical care and lots of other things in terms of a common usage language. So then when you look at a dictionary definition, the idea of criticality, for instance, in care or, you know, with your house, you know, is your house falling down? Are you in critical care? What are the two or three things needed to make sure that that patient lives? As opposed to, if you're thinking about the health of that patient, like a health of an entity, you know, how they sleep, eat, exercise, and some of those things would not be viewed as critical, but they would be viewed as important as a more colloquial language, although I know that this is more technical. So my first suggestion on that would be to maybe use the word important rather than critical. Or my second would be actually you could just go back, and I know you haven't done it anywhere else, so this is the thing, so just go back with your material, which you've obviously defined up top. Yeah. Why don't you just reuse that if it's got that same meaning? I assume that you didn't want to do that for certain reasons. So I said, if you don't want to use the same word, use important, or then that, or... Yeah, I wouldn't use critical. I just think it has the wrong connotations. There's already confusion amongst the fact that actually what investors view as material is sometimes different from what auditors or accountants or companies kind of view material. So I get that, but I think important has that sort of sense. This item about the future is quite interesting because it's almost slightly awkward to say, we're not going to require you to talk about the future, but if you have talked about the future, we are going to require you to always talk about the future again. I don't know how you necessarily reconcile that, because as soon as you have started talking about it, the implication is that you should always talk about it. And therefore, one of the unintended consequences of that as a company starting out, like as a completely new company, if I was doing it from conservative view, I would then never want to make a forward forecast ever, because now I'm going to always be on the hook for it. That's kind of from that. From a user perspective, even if it's very well qualified, the future looking aspects are always some of the most interesting because they will align with our views, other views, and we know it's a view. And actually, management teams are often very hooked up about, oh, we're going to be really crucified because we put our point in if it doesn't come out. Actually, I don't think overall investors aren't so tied to that. We just want to do it. And pronouncements, particularly over the long term, because I know like 1 year you could say it, where you're saying things like, you know, our base planning, and this is where scenario analysis might come in, our base planning is the market's going to grow 5%, or you could say mid-single digit. We're going to grow 1 or 2 points above that because we think we're going to take market share. We're going to take market share because X, Y, Z, better customer service, better products, but we don't know the risks are our product development doesn't work. We do mis-servicing, you know, the puts and takes there. And then, you know, if the market actually only grew 3, but you still took those couple of points, we'd know why, because who knows about the market is. But if, you know, the market grew 8 and you grew 8, then you knew you didn't take those points. So those sort of things I think we would accept. And for some of these other newer measurements coming out, go on.
Just clarify, so you're drawing an inference that the once a forecast had been published, then future forecasts would also have to be made. Is that...
That's the inference that I get from what the wording of this language, language here. But I'm also saying that actually, again, what you want and what you need, the forecasting is always really interesting for us. I do think, you know, this is all that, like, quarterly guidance, for instance, is an extremely bad idea. I don't know why it went that way, the certain things, you know, there's things. But these long-term other things are I think, really useful, scenario analysis, all of this as well. And there is something which can be done in the words, not just the quantitative, although to someone else's earlier point, if you can quantify it, that is useful, but you have to allow that some things can't be. So don't dodge it because it's hard if you can do it, but if you can't do it, don't hide it just because you can't measure it. So that's the kind of complication there. And you can see this because of this occupation of Fed watching. You know, their qualitative words that they use are very poured upon. And actually, it's the same for companies. In fact, you've got whole algorithmic things looking at that. The qualifying statements that you use in qualitative for how sure you are on certain things are, you know, very, you know, we think the market's 5%. We were confident. We're now only somewhat confident, or how that. So there is some in the qualitative language, even before, and I think we've talked about this again, that all other extra financial, non-financial, we haven't got, unfortunately, this agreed term, that the, all of that really important part as well, ideally to be captured, you know, to be captured, of which it doesn't necessarily point to that so much. I will stop there.
So potentially provide an out for people if they've made a 5-year prediction of, you know, double-digit growth or something, if they would need to walk away from that.
Yeah, and actually that's often market practice. You'll see companies which do. In fact, there is some evidence that you are rewarded for coming out with long-term strategy growth and targets. And if you said it was going to be 10% over 5 years, and then next year there's a technological change and it's changed, no one's going to hold you to, okay, yeah, now that market's growing at 5%. That's the facts of how the market is. If your other strategy was right in control, maybe you can still take a couple of points of share. And we also want to know the other way, that actually if the market went up because of a positive effect and you only grew in line with the market, well, actually, something didn't go quite as well, even though, you know, you made the 10%. It actually wasn't so much from you because it's actually there was other market motions. But you do need potential get-outs, but you don't want to... on the one hand, you don't want to put off management teams from making useful forward-looking things, particularly where it's been reported into board or they're actually using this to budget and doing that. You know, you don't want to have a rod off their back. You know, you want them to disclose. On the other hand, you also don't want it to be sort of like, okay, you've got a rod for your back. We realize everything is dynamic. In fact, it might change on a month-by-month basis. But actually, users of information are generally, we know that, it's sympathetic. We see it all the time in daily market movements. It's not, we're prepared to accept that.
Okay. Rodrigo.
Well, first, I think that with respect to the question 1B about forecasts and targets, I think that should be some explicit mention to consistency between those forecasts and estimates and those used for IAS 36, IFRS 9, or any kind of critical accounting estimates. But there should be some kind of reference to consistency.
No.
Sorry.
Fellow preparer.
Yeah, that's scary. That's scary because what you use for an impairment valuation may not be what you're using for guidance.
Why not? If it was, say, long-term growth or long-term interest expectations, why would those differ?
For IAS 36 purposes, you may just be so conservative just to get a big enough number as opposed to what you really expect. You know, all you're worried about is passing. Mm-hmm. Once you've passed, who cares? Mm-hmm. We'll think about the guidance separately. Mm-hmm. And your guidance might be less than your IAS 36 number too. But I'd be very concerned about linking them.
Anyway,
you could be tipping your hand that you don't want to do.
Just picking up on something Jed mentioned earlier as well, I think that this part of the forecast and then the targets, I think there should be some kind of disclosure with respect to the governance process that is gone through to get to those. I mean, should be not like a chapter or something, but at least a short description of internally how is the corporate governance for arriving at those estimates. One other thing about events that occur after the reporting period, I believe there should be some kind of mention to the future impacts and how they'll be accounted for with respect to IAS 10. So I think there should be, if they occur after the reporting period, that should be, there should be some guidance on how they'll be accounted for. And lastly, with respect to the scope of the information to be provided in this section, I think there should be some mention about balancing different time frames so that it's not all focused on midterm or all focused on long term. I think here we're not talking about short term, but I don't think it should be entirely long term. For example, you have to have some kind of balance between different portions of time periods.
Okay. So that's interesting. Our sort of hope has been that the sort of business model focus at the long term end and the strategy focused at the shorter term end would deliver that. Your feeling is we need to go further.
Yeah. Or else we're going to be stuck in a lot of short term disclosures and a lot of 50 years from now disclosures, and then the mid part will be uncovered.
Lisa.
Okay. Three comments. One concerns slide 9. There'll just be one moment getting to it. So I'm not quite sure I understand the time frame assumptions that are shown on the left side of the page in terms of measures on actions are longer term in nature than measures on effects. I must say I don't understand that. So something to consider. Maybe it's just a case of providing an example and the light bulb will go on for me, but it didn't strike me.
Shall I provide that now?
Just sure.
You might have identified a problem with customer loss. So step one is my strategy is going to be I need to revamp my front of house service. I'm going to recruit some new people to deliver a better customer product. So that will give me, you know, I can do that relatively quickly, but actually it will take a while to translate into new customer numbers.
Okay.
And that will be an effect of the action.
Okay. Thank you. The next comment is in regard to slide 16, which okay, so I do think that further guidance is going to be needed here, and I do understand that is probably forthcoming in the third screen. So the integrated reporting framework sets out the four elements of a business model discussion. And I'm not saying it needs to be those four, but there's something, right? There's inputs, there's business activities, there's outputs, and there's outcomes. So I think some structure, even if it's considered loosey-goosey, will need to come. That's coming in the next stream.
We look forward to that discussion.
Okay. And then the final point, I'll just offer this as a point of clarity on page 17, because you do rightly flag that confusion in terms of stakeholders' legitimate needs and interests. The integrated reporting framework, the point here is that the framework is encouraging organizations to understand and to communicate their own understanding of their market, their customer base, and so on. You know, so if the company only produces yellow widgets, but their market only wants red widgets, don't be surprised when your sales are low. That's the point. It's to communicate that you have a grasp of what your stakeholders need and want. And so I continue to think that that's an important point because it gives insight into the way management, you know, understands its context. What has gone wrong is that report preparers have misinterpreted that requirement in the framework to think that, oh, the integrated report, the audience for the integrated report is everyone, which is absolutely not the point. So I'm happy that you've caught that there is a potential trap there. I wouldn't encourage walking away from the concept. I think it's quite important. Again, provides insight into the quality of management. But I would learn from our experience in terms of the how this is phrased and to avoid that pitfall.
And do you think, because we've gone with relationships here effectively instead of stakeholders, do you think that is helpful?
No, I think... No, I don't think that avoids the problem that we're encountering, whether you call it relationships or stakeholders. I just think that the issue is that the confusion lies with audience for the report versus point of the requirement, which is to demonstrate that the company knows what it's doing, that it's listening, mm-hmm. and that it's taking that information into account for the longer-term success of the business.
Yeah.
And where it has gone off the rails is report preparers think that, oh, okay, the integrated report needs to meet the information needs of everyone, and that's the challenge. So that's something that we're going to need to look at, but you're right in catching that.
Good point. Yeah.
Deepa.
Thank you. Overall, I'm very supportive of the content of the slide deck. The one point I wanted to make was around slide 11 and on forward-looking information. And even if you use a different term, my suggestion would be including a concept such as that within here. Because in the UK, with a strategic report, what we have found is strategic reports are strategic but not forward-looking enough. And if you lose that flavour, my fear is linking it back to the previous discussion that everything in the management commentary will just be historic and based on the financial statements and miss that forward piece. And particularly when you get around these, what I call the broader matters that impact financial performance over the longer term, those will be, you know, things like climate risk. We're looking out for those. And then just to comment on the last point about resources and relationships, I take a slightly different view. I think that's we got into a bit of a tangle with other stakeholders, and I think resources and relationships is a better term in that with resources it captures things like intangibles, and with relationships you think about the wider impacts but still reporting through your shareholder or provide us a financial capital lens. So I think it's a broad term, which perhaps with some more explanation would work quite well.
Okay. So perhaps bring some forward looking back as a phrase, but just be careful that you then describe what you mean in the section that follows.
Yes.
Also, in the original practice statement, we use the word prospects, and future prospects. So it's still trying to get that flavour of you've got to tell me something about what you think is going to happen, but it's not saying it has to be financial. Because I totally agree with that comment, because when you read this, what you seem to be saying is, I want to know what your progress is in terms of your strategy. Well, that's great. Well, now I know I'm 10% of the way through my strategy, but what does that mean? Does that mean I'm actually going to make more money next year, or I'm going to make less money because I've still got to do the next 15% of the strategy, which is the big cost piece? Or
And is that not clear enough from the objectives we have?
No, because when you read this, it just reads as though, tell me what you've actually done, not what it means for the next year. Is that...
Friend?
Probably 3 points to make. One, I struggle with the comments around the subsequent events period. To have it different, like the time period coverage should be the same, as at least in our world, because we file our MD&A the same time as the financial statements, so they have to be as of the same date. So you've got the same periods, but if you have identified more items in the MD&A or management commentary, why is it material there and not material in the financial statements would be a question. I think that would cause potentially some heartburn. The second comment in here, a lot of this stuff, I think the legal liability to be doing some of this stuff is scary. This is just more opportunity for people to sue you. And I think maybe for the users, if you know, maybe the trade-off is if you don't sue us, we'll give you more information. Not trying to be funny about it, but that's really the chilling factor to a large degree.
And is there anything specific that you've got concerns with?
I would say anything. My concerns were really about forward-looking stuff.
And because obviously forward-looking here can be historical, factual information that is relevant to understanding the future.
Determining or just trends out of historical information, that's fine. And how people want to take that trend line and extrapolate it, that's their business. But for us to talk a lot about what we expect for the future is scary. And in our business, you know, I don't know what it's like in the rest of the world, but the government in Canada looks, they got three whipping boys, the oil companies, the banks, and the telephone companies. So whichever one is out of favor is the one they're gonna go after from a regulatory perspective. And you just never know when the thing is going to stop on your square.
So the language on implications there is probably the bit that you would seek some more clarification on.
Potentially. And also the multiple periods or the number of periods. I totally am a supporter of, you know, 3 or 5 year trends. But, you know, if the regulator says you will do 2 years of financial statements, why have you got 5 years or 5 periods in your MD&A or magic commentary and 2 in your financial statements?
Although it may not be 5 periods for everything in the MD&A, maybe
correct.
One measure that is 5 periods.
Yeah. So that I haven't sorted that out in my head, but you do have that disconnect.
Yeah, okay.
Alessandro.
Thanks. One comment on slide 13 about the last bullet on the left-hand side, order book, pipeline, and backlog. I was wondering whether these are not also examples of indicators of operational performance in the context of the previous discussion we've had, because obviously they give an indication of future development, but at the same time they tell to what extent you are being successful in the marketplace because your clients increase your order book or you have development on these measures. So I think this can be seen as dealing with both actual performance and future development. On slide 18, one comment I had, it's on EU impact reporting. In the context of the directive, it is quite widely acknowledged that the impact is meant to be two ways, so both the impact that the company has on the non-financial matters, as well as how these non-financial matters impact the company. Obviously, this may have different contextualization in the practice statement because the extent to which the company impacts the environment and the other matters is of interest for the public at large, whilst the way environment and other non-financial matters impact the company, they are of interest also of financial investors, so to say. So I was wondering what is the view that you are taking at this stage, whether you would cater for both impacts.
So, yes, I mean, the intent is that broader impact, but within the constraints of our materiality definition, which it focuses on things that are material to our users. So if you have a company that is undertaking an activity that parts of society don't like, then there is a reputational risk. Right. And if that is sufficiently material, then the impacts from those activities are needed to understand that reputational risk.
Now, there's an element of core and more in this as well. I was just wondering to the same question. And do you think that you would refer to other reports that have more detail? I'm just thinking, for example, sustainability reports that give much more about CO2 emission. But you would say there's an impact report somewhere in the more detail. But here we only incorporate something that's higher level. Or
yeah, and I think we have that point from Stream One that we can see that there are going to be topics covered in their management commentary that will be of interest to a wider audience. And the question was raised, well, should that be acknowledged in the practice statement, and should there be something that's enabling for people then to say more information can be found here? And as you point out, this would be a very good example of that.
Okay, and one other comment on slide 24 on scenario analysis, similar to what I said for the previous discussion we had. I think it would be useful to reinforce the message that if for internal purposes you use scenario analysis, then you should disclose it in the management commentary. Obviously, if you don't use it for internal purposes, then you don't need to make it up. But if you currently use it, then it should be disclosed, perhaps with a less level of detail, obviously, than what is internally disclosed, but it should be perhaps part of it. And one last comment on the consistency between financial statements and the management commentary, what you use in terms of planning and valuation for financial statements should be consistent with what you use for the management commentary. I think normally also audit requirements for the management report check the consistency between what's in the management report compared to the financial statement. So I would be surprised to have a totally different set of assumptions for future value for planning or future valuations, depending on which set of the annual report you're looking at. That's just a side comment. Thanks.
Andreas.
Thanks, Hans. To just follow on from what Alessandro just said, I think maybe Trent's concern could be mitigated if at least you say it is directionally consistent. If you
100%,
So if your key point is we are not exactly using the same numbers, but at least they are not opposing each other, which is the key point. You're not making up something just for the sake of providing it. I think that's the what you're aiming at.
Yeah. So, for example, I think in the if you were using the DCF, like value and use model under IAS 36, if I remember correctly, you're not allowed to take into account restructuring. Mm-hmm. As an example, whereas maybe you do take that into account when you're doing your guidance. So, again, you know, potential discount.
Okay, but in that circumstance, I would say you're comparing two different scenarios here, whereas sure. The consistency aspect to me would be if you apply the very same scenario in two different sets of documents, then I would expect them to be exactly the same. And that, to me, is the consistency part. So you shouldn't be working on two different assumptions for the very same scenario. If you change your scenario, then obviously the outcome could be different.
Agreed.
So it may be a wording issue then here.
Sure.
I have to torture you one more time, and then I keep shut. On forward-looking information.
Back to the point.
I perfectly understand litigation is an issue, and that is something that might, in the end, convince the ISB not to mandate forward-looking disclosures or forecasts or whatever you say. Can I ask, if you look on page 11 and see the box there, I must say I don't quite understand what the current version of the practice statement is saying. If you look into paragraph 18, the penultimate sentence, it reads, management should provide forward-looking information through narrative explanations or through quantitative data, which may, but are not required, to include projections or forecasts. So it may be purely me and semantics, but could somebody explain to me where the difference between a forecast and quantitative data is? I mean, I have trouble in understanding this. So the first part of the sentence to me is you could provide it in a qualitative or quantitative way, but then I would say this is quite holistic. So where then is the difference between projections and forecast? Is there a different quality of the information, or what precisely is it?
A forecast would be explicit to the company, and you might, for example, say that the industry forecasts that the industry volume will go up 20%. That would be quantitative.
But it wouldn't be a forecast for the entity, and you might include that.
Mm-hmm.
You want, like, so you can have quantitative data that's not an explicit forecast. There are probably quite a few examples.
Yeah, maybe just me, but I think that there is a language issue here that we should be cleaning up, really, if that's what we mean. So the difference between the external environment or general trend information, for instance, and information that pertains only to the company, I think then we should use different wording in order to make this clear. Still, I think, and I come back to my previous comment, I would prefer, if for good reasons the ISB doesn't want to mandate the information, to include some sort of aspirational statement. Entities are encouraged or something like that, in order to make clear that you could increase the information value of a management commentary if it included prospective information both about the market and the entity. That would give Trent probably some leeway in saying, okay, I'm not required to do it, so I can provide that outside of, and I still have the discussion about the forward-looking information in the management commentary, but I don't have the forward information as such in the management commentary. But I think I would prefer if actually the ISB became a bit more aspirational.
Okay, Chris.
So again, not going over the same ground in terms of the prospects piece. If we go to slide 8, it might just be terminology, but when you talk about managing known matters, I'm not sure that that's picking up what else I think should be captured, which would be the risks and opportunities. So for me, a known matter would be an outcome that you know that you might have thought last year there was a risk and actually it's turned into a known matter and now you're telling people how to manage that. But I still think there's benefit in saying, well, I've still got all these risks, and I still think this is what the prospects are in connection with those risks.
I understood. And that no matters is not language that's in the illustrative drafting. We've just used it as shorthand here, so clearly we were right not to put it in the illustrative drafting. Yep.
Okay. So then the other thing I do think, if we're, and I do think we need the future prospects or something like that, but on page 10 we talk about commercial sensitivity, and we seem to imply that we think that you can always work your way around so nothing's commercially sensitive. I have to say, from a jurisdictional perspective in Australia, the requirement to do management commentary comes with an explicit exemption that says if it's commercially sensitive or whatever, similar, then you don't have to provide it. So I think, and I thought we'd discuss this at the last meeting, there does need to be something that recognises there may be circumstances. So I think in that space, and it's, well, what would you disclose to make sure that people understand that you've taken that exemption and how far you might be able to get to.
Yes, and that's certainly something we need to come back to, although bearing in mind that commercial sensitivity is often dealt with through national legal codes, so there's potentially a risk of conflict here.
Yeah, but I think you're going to have to...
Saying you need something.
You need something, because if you come out and basically say, in all circumstances, I think you can work your way through this, and then you've got a legislative piece that says, actually, no, I'm telling you, there's circumstances that you can take advantage of, that's going to be difficult. So my last comment, it's kind of a weird one. And I don't quite know where it fits, but I thought I'd put it out there because it was quite interesting when I got this feedback. So the discussion was from someone who was at a telco, and they said to me, it's not just economic dependencies that you need to think about. It's also this new terminology that which they use, which was commercial dependencies. And I said, well, what do you mean? And they said, in our industry now, we are dependent on others to make decisions, and we react to what those decisions actually are. We don't actually have an economic dependency on that entity. We actually don't even have a relationship with them, and they're not really our competitors, but we're following what they do. And he said that's information that's really important, but it means it's actually really hard for us to tell you what our strategy is. And so the example he used was 5G. So he said we could do a lot of things, but it is all going to depend on how some of the Chinese companies, how Apple and Google and all of those actually start to use 5G. That's going to drive what we actually end up being able to do.
Okay, so I think that's something we should take into the discussion on operating environment for the next round, because absolutely, yeah, that what others are doing is fundamental there.
Right.
Sandy?
I was just going to follow on the definition of forward-looking information. I wrote a paper a couple of years ago, so it's quite a distance to me, so I can't remember all the details of it. But, I just wanted to reiterate the point that I think it's important to define what that means in the context of this management commentary, because it means different things in different jurisdictions. Because in the U.S., under SEC literature, there's a very different definition of forward-looking information and projections versus forecasts. And I can't do that off the top of my head, because it's never made a lot of economic sense to me, but it's made a lot of legal sense to some lawyers, so it's very hard to do it. But I think that it is important, but it's also important to remember that the financial statements, particularly when you think of insurance and the like, there's lots of forward-looking information included in that. So I think that it's an important thing to define. And the reason the reason that I wrote the paper was because people were using that in the SEC definition of it and not necessarily considering how much forward-looking information there was actually in the financial statements. Mm-hmm. So I just think it's an important consideration to look at. I'm not doing it justice off the top of my head, but I just remember doing some work related to that.
And that actually was the thinking of why we dropped the T term altogether. But I think by dropping the term altogether, people have rightly made the point that you potentially run the risk that this sort of section gets misinterpreted.
Yeah, so, yeah, right.
We need to address it.
I think we need to cover both of those concerns. Yeah. When we...
Massimo?
Thank you. Comments. I would reiterate Ben one on the definition of critical factors. And also the need on slide 16 to provide examples of what you mean by critical or whatever factors, because it was not so clear to me. On slide 23, I would like to gain what Alessandro said about the risk report in financial institution. Today, in the risk report of financial institution, sensitivity analysis are provided quite massively. So I'm wondering how you manage this information and the risk to have duplication information. So do you see a cross-reference here for a financial institution, for instance, or it's just a duplication information?
I think that's a good question, and others' views here would be welcome, because so cross-referencing, clearly we're encouraging it to the financial statements. If it is overused potentially, then it becomes very difficult for users to absorb all the information they need to absorb. So if they're being asked to look into documents that address other questions, but equally I see very much the relevance of scenario information in the financial sector, so perhaps that's something we need to come back to, unless there's a feeling that this information can be summarized up into a management commentary in order to address the objective of the management commentary while still acknowledging that there's this more information outside.
In the core and more, maybe,
yeah.
Perspective.
Ryoko?
Thank you. I have some comment on slide 19. I think the ESD is understood is quite narrow in some times. I think the other words, for example, sustainability information.
Can you speak up a little bit?
Sorry. In 1819, the staff says ESG would be quite narrow, and we will use the other word, maybe instead. I really agree with. And also, we have to be careful, and sometimes ESG or sustainable information becomes, it would be the own purpose. But I think in the financial statement or the management commentary, the information is linked to the future financial performance or the future cash flow, or call it cash flow. So we have to be careful to pay attention about that point. So it is related to my next comment in the page 21. The SASB, I understand the purpose of to provide a sustainable information, I think, but that is why the survey would be useful to the point. But so actually, I am a researcher, and I sometimes use survey or I initiate the survey, but survey is very useful for the preparers. I think the storyteller can use the survey in their own way. So I think that for understanding the good sustainable information, it will be very useful. But to understand the future cash flow or future financial performance, it will be really dangerous in many cases. I think the survey is, it could be useful, but I think it is not necessary, never essential information. So I think you should not, or we should not put much attention on this point. So I can't understand why you are providing the survey information in one slide.
Shall I respond on that? We were conscious that measures such as net promoter score, customer satisfaction, staff satisfaction are now quite common in a number of countries. In fact, they're mandated in some countries. So, our feeling was that there would be useful information in those for users, and that practice was sufficiently prevalent that it would be helpful to provide
guidance. But I think it's a management commentary, as Sandy said in the morning, it would be biased by the company's management or executive. It's very risky to use the result of the survey as they can use in their own stories. So it would be useful in any other part, the survey result would be provided in line with any other sustainable information. But in the management commentary, we have to be careful to using this information, I think.
Okay, so urging caution there.
Mark?
Thank you, and apologies, I managed to blow my card down. I can't do a French accent, so I'm going to stick with English. I wanted probably to make three points. One was really to pick up what I said in relation to the first slide that we saw this morning, that in terms of auditability of the information in these types of reports, the auditor is going to need to look at the criteria which will sit in this guidance effectively. But these criteria are not really the criteria. They're guidance on how to develop criteria of your own. In many cases, there's not really going to be any precise method for determining what is material, what's a material matter to disclose or to talk about. There's not going to be any definitive measurement bases or other bases for disclosing or providing information. So I really just wanted to emphasise the importance of the characteristics of useful information, the point I made this morning, and how the preparer is supposed to use those, all the ideas and concepts in those to decide what to do, to develop the criteria they're going to use. I say that because the auditing model really has very similar characteristics that the practitioner is going to have to be sure are reflected in the information in order to, first of all, be able to take on the assignment and then to perform it effectively. Those characteristics provide many of what practitioners call assertions, i.e. the things about the information they're going to test whether they're right, and if they're not right, they're going to be misstated. So those are really important points and underpin not only that, but also the concept of verifiability, which you talked about in the first slide deck. The second thing I just wanted to touch on in relation to that is forward-looking or a different term for it, or no term for it, I think, is what you're proposing. We call it future-oriented. I'm not sure a different term necessarily helps, but at least future-oriented perhaps conveys slightly better the fact that really you're looking at information that helps you to look at what the future might look like. It's broader than a prediction. In that context, historical information is also future-oriented. The corollary of the past is not a guarantee of the future is that it provides a lot of information about the future. And so actually a lot of stuff is future oriented in that sense. One of the things I wanted to say about that is that we thought there are two types of future oriented information the more we thought about it. One is really driven by the intent of the entity, i.e. what's under the entity's control. They can decide to do certain things to implement their strategy, and they can make quite bold statements about their intent. So the information that you need to provide about that is readily available and can be provided relatively easily. It in itself could be definite or it could be conditional on certain things happening. So it's not always certain. And then the other category is the things that really aren't under the control of the entity and they follow or they take account of things which are not under the control of the entity. And that drives you down the route of uncertainty. And I raise that because, as I said this morning, it's unclear to me what guidance is available here. Maybe the intent is that preparers should always just look at the conceptual framework, but it's unclear to me from the guidance here how a preparer is supposed to think about uncertainty. You know, what measurements can be made in the light of uncertainty, or what limitations are there? Those are things that they would need to think about. And in fact, when there's uncertainty, what happens in practice is that a lot of these things about the future are actually measured by proxies, so some other way of figuring something out. It doesn't even have to be about the future. Stuff around customer satisfaction is not measured really very directly, even with surveys. So how much that really tells you about the underlying thing is questionable. So I think when you get to the guidance that you've drafted so far, it does deal with some of those points, but there isn't a sort of bigger structural explanation of how you should approach it. You've got individual bits of guidance, and you can maybe figure out how you're supposed to approach those generally. So that's the sort of aspect of that. And then a more particular point, the point about critical in terms of features. I'm not sure if you did mean it to be the same as material, but it seems to me that probably logically would be right, or at least that it's relevant. That's what's relevant. If they are meant to be the same, I think it is confusing to introduce a different term without doing, you know, without saying specifically that is the same thing. Otherwise, it looks like you've got several layers of decision to make before you get to what you're going to put in the document. And I did raise that point earlier today as well, so it links back to that. And then perhaps the last point, and it may just be me, because I don't think anybody else has sort of really necessarily said they found it that confusing, but I am finding it somewhat confusing to think about what's in this slide deck separately from what's in slide deck two. And I really am partly, I think, because this one seems to be focused in the way you describe things here. You seem to be focused on this is telling you about the future. And I'm not sure what the second one is entirely telling. So whether it's only telling us about things that have happened or not, it seems to have a bit of both in it. But this definitely seems to be more about the future. And yet the things that you anticipate here in your discussion about the capitals and so on, those are just as relevant in terms of past performance, position, and
progress.
Thank you. Progress, the right word. So I don't know. I would have found it more easy to follow, I think, if in fact the distinction was between information about past performance, position, and progress, and then information supporting views about future performance, position. That seems to me a more easy to follow distinction, because the thing about strategy, the stuff that you've got at the end of this section, seems to underpin both of those. You've been following the strategy in the past, or a different one, and you're following the strategy in the future, and really all you're trying to do is provide information about the past and the future. It, of course, even that is somewhat overlapping for the point I made earlier, that the past also is a predictor of the future. But I think I would find that more straightforward. I don't know whether that would change the way you write the guidance or merely the way you explain what you're doing, but it seems to me it's harder to follow this way. Anyway, thank you.
So if I can sort of clarify the intent on that last
suggestion. So, I mean, as we have it now, the sort of deck two discussion was covering things that had crystallized, at least to some extent, in the financial statements. And this deck three discussion is covering things that may not have crystallized. Clearly, there's going to be a boundary of things that are in the process of crystallizing, which are trends, that would potentially be picked up by both. So I suppose the question is there a clearer way of expressing that than we have now? And it is what you were suggesting. Do you feel that is sort of consistent with that?
Yeah, I think it's the division between them, but it's also the fact that if you do provide the guidance in those two categories the way you've just described it, I think that will mean that you're suggesting that somebody could describe the same underlying aspect or feature of strategy in two different ways. Somehow or other, they're not separate to my mind. They're, what happened in the past is a continuum with what's going to happen in the future. And so in a way, it seems to me it would be better based around relevant features of the business model and strategy and those sorts of things, but with a discussion about the past and following on to the future. I don't know if that makes sense, but, and that's probably just me, I suspect, because I'm not sure others are.
Well, I think the question particularly for the users there is whether you would feel that would draw out the discussion of current year variances, sort of utilization, revenue, sales mix that you were looking for. Because you're absolutely right, that's all strategy. So the question would be whether that needs to be thought of separately, which maybe we need to think about.
And one final point. The other thing I'm not sure I see here is any guidance that helps people figure out how far into the future they need to be thinking. Mm-hmm. That'll be very different for different types of entities. And so something that would help with that would be...
So come back to what we had on materiality and see if that is now in the context of what we have on performance, whether that's enough guidance. Ben?
So maybe just trying to respond to a couple of those and might try and take the time frame one as well. I do think there is a distinction between this material ESG sustainability information and the non-material, in the sense that the ones which affects the financials we're most interested in. And it's weird that we often say it's ESG because G is almost always thought of as material, but in any event. And surveys can be that, although then they can also not be that. So that's why I think that's quite important. And so tying it back in, because I know it came up in the first one and will probably come up in our next one, for the sort of strategy purpose part, because your strategy or purpose could well be to delight customers with very high customer satisfaction. In fact, I'd be very close to one of Amazon's stated purposes. And to make good on that, Amazon tell you what their net promoter score is, tracked and things, and it's quite a well-established way of knowing whether they're meeting their purpose in delighting and keeping customers, whether you have your five-star thing. And therefore, that actually then becomes a material piece, whether you want to put that on S or whatever, because the survey backs up purpose and strategy. And they would go so far as to say, if NPS goes down, they want it stable to go up, because that's going to power sales. So it, links very directly into future financial for them. That would be a case where it was material. There's obviously other cases where you could say, well, that survey was fluff, didn't tell us anything, was not material, in fact. Obscured aspects. Guidance on time frame. I think most companies should be able to know themselves what they consider short, medium, or long. That's my sense. The difficulty being is that sometimes they back away from long, where I would be very interested in long. So sometimes they're not prepared to go out, particularly in a cyclical industry, they're not prepared to go out to year five because they're saying, there's too much which is changing. Whereas from my point of view is, although I know that a lot is changing, if you give me some of these baseline assumptions, then actually I can make a better view on that. And actually, to an earlier point, is that because I don't know of many management teams of large business which don't do some sort of scenario planning, whether that's, you know, you have a plan A budget and then plan B and C when things go better and worse. So although if we ask them to say, okay, if you're reporting that into management, then you should tell us that information, that's quite a big gap from what is actually done, because they do it and they generally don't tell us. I mean, there's some different, you've got some scenario analysis sometimes about commodity pricings and how that would affect, or FX and things like that, but not in terms of budget planning. But we all know they set a budget, sometimes sensitive or not. So I don't know how you square that. One element that it does square in, bringing back management compensation, is that if we see that this is how you get paid out, say 100% on your bonus, because we'll see the metric that they're using or not, and we go, well, you seem to be paying out only on your base case scenario. Well, how is that a stretch bonus? Surely you've got your base case, which pays out whatever, and we can argue about whether it pays out a median or second quartile. And then we go, well, you want a stretch target. So if you overachieve on that, that's what it is. So that's actually where some of the tension comes through on the budget, because we go, well, if you're going to get paid out for a well paid out for what you are saying to us is average performance, we know you've got budget scenarios which are much more aggressive and sort of say, okay, you're probably going to get paid out more on that. And that's where some of that tension is. Albeit we understand that companies also don't want to tip their hand. You don't want to get sued by some other elements, which is why some, at least management commentary aspects of scenario analysis, if not the exact numbers, are always very useful for us, because it tells us, is this pay being set appropriately? Is the stretch target and your baseline that you're getting us, is it really in the middle of the scenarios are you getting at, or is it more optimistic or pessimistic because you want to be paid more, or because, you know, you want to under-promise, over-deliver? And that's part of where we're going. So that's why it's always something that we want. Whether it's something need or we should have, again, there is a balance there. And then this is to that, because we almost always find future information really valuable. But there are a lot of sensitivities around that. And you'll find, you know, a lot of the analyst community and things is constantly trying to ask that and then assess what future information we do or don't have versus that. So anything which goes towards that way is helpful for us, but we understand from the other side of why it might not be there.
And it's interesting you've picked up on scenario analysis in that context, because as you've seen from the slide deck, we'd approached it in a sort of longer term remote events context rather than a budgetary planning context. So I think there's a question as to whether both are relevant, or, and if not, whether we need to be clearer that we only mean the latter.
Can it go space? I mean, a very tiny example is going to manage. So you often have scenario analysis saying, you know, we're going to have profit X if the oil price is Y. If the oil price is Y divided by 2, then you get a different, you know, that's very much that. And then you're trying to tie it in, well, we don't want to get management to get paid or the company to profit necessarily over the oil price part, which they didn't have control over. But if they did have something control over and went down, we still want them actually to be paid for that job. So that comes all under scenario and all of this and strategic planning and all of that.
Okay, any other comments?
It's chance.
That brings us.
So I think Julia summarized. Yeah. Yeah.
Julia.
I'm looking forward to the enthusiasm.
So clearly, the sort of bulk of this discussion was all about forward looking information for the lack of better term. And there are all the questions about, well, first of all, how aspirational we should be in the practice statement in encouraging versus requiring maybe companies to disclose something to that extent, how we label it. So the whole discussion about forecast versus projection versus forward-looking versus future-oriented. So what is it that actually we are talking about, and what are the differences? The question about auditability. So if something is in there, then how we support sort of the verifiability of that information. Clearly, there is, on one hand, quite a lot of support from the user point of view in terms of this information is valuable, but clearly there is also sensitivity from the preparer point of view of, you know, what can be disclosed and what are the implications of such a disclosure. So there is a whole bulk of things for us to go away and
think about. And I suppose in my own mind, this links to the comment about the structure that Marek has made, and whether we sort of stick with the structure we have in today's discussion or whether we need to rethink it. And I suppose one aspect of this is that the structure of the practice statement is different from the structure of management commentaries produced by companies. So we need to think about, you know, what is the structure of our guidance, but that then it can still give flexibility to companies in how they structure management commentaries, I suppose. And then in terms of other things that came up, so quite a few comments about our use of the term critical and whether we need to revisit and rethink that, so we noted this. Scenario analysis, whether we should go a little bit further to where we are in today's proposals, and whether actually companies should be required to put out scenario analysis if they actually do use them for their internal purposes and the link to management compensation. So this area for us to go in and think about. And then other sort of biggish discussions that I know that is about consistency between assumptions used in financial statements in accordance with IFRS and assumptions used in management commentary. And again, we need to think about it. So are we talking about directionally being consistent, and does it need to be sort of identical and identical scenarios? So that whole area we need to come back to, I suppose. So these were my biggest takeaways from this discussion. Do you have anything to?
No, that's a very good summary.
Very good. Well, that brings us to the end of this meeting before time. It's very hot.
Yeah, it is.
We are finishing a bit early, but we'll try to do something about it because it's just terrible. But it didn't damage the quality of the discussions. It was very good, very good day. Thank you so much for coming over. I wish you all a safe trip home and a very enjoyable weekend. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.